Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
This is a Hat Trick
podcast.
Oh, lovely.
Do you remember your sex education? Was it helpful to you? Was it filled with scientific information rather than real, practical advice? I'm Diggory Waite, and this is The Real Sex Education. Each week, I'll be joined by a guest. We'll impart our own sex wisdom, ask our own sex questions, and we'll go over all the things they don't teach you in school. To bring this all together, though, we'll need an expert. A sexpert, if you will. But the only sex and relationship therapist I know is my mum. Hello, Mum.
Hello, Diggs.
In this podcast, we speak to comedian and podcaster Stuart Goldsmith.
I would normally be paying someone for this experience. I'm so pleased to get this free therapy from you.
We talk about parenting.
Oh, yes, my children are one day going to rifle through my possessions. I'd better make sure everything is secure, more secure than it is at the moment.
Cooling off in the bedroom.
And then I'll walk away, take a cold shower and hit myself in the face a few times.
And mountains of porn.
Climbing on this mountain of maybe 600 copies of The Sun and going, oh, my God, have you seen this?
Welcome to The Real Sex Education. I'm Diggory Waite, and as ever, I'm joined by accredited sex and relationship therapist, Kate Campbell. Hello, Mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Today, Mum and I are very glad to welcome Stuart Goldsmith to the show. Stuart is a comedian, host of the Comedian's Comedian podcast, and co-hosts the Child Labour podcast with Cindy V.
Yeah, and that is brilliant because they talk obviously a lot about parenting and childcare, and they have quite different views. They come from very different positions, and it's really brilliant to listen to how respectful they are of one another and how they model just good communication. So I just think, you know, it's so relevant to sex and relationship therapy to think about ways that people can have very different views. And it's perfectly okay. And you can come to an accommodation and find a middle ground. And they kind of do that really well.
Yeah, exactly. We speak to Stuart a lot about parenting today in the episode. And we'll be speaking with Cindy V in a couple of weeks' time.
Oh, great.
Well, if you would like to put a question to a real sex and relationship therapist like my mum, you can. At the end of the episode, we put your questions to Kate about sex, relationships and everything in between. You can send in your queries to podcasts@hatchet.com. That's Hatchet with two T's. But before we get there, we spoke with serial podcaster Stuart Goldsmith. You, I've introduced you as a serial podcaster. Is that right?
Oh, God, I suppose I've been doing it long enough that I am now serial, like a little veteran one day.
Like you'll be up on a wall in some podcasting police place. You're a serial podcaster. Let's get, I suppose, down into the nitty-gritty of it. Are you excited to talk about your sex education and all that sort of stuff?
No, I'm really scared. I was making some notes beforehand because
Really?
Which isn't something I would ordinarily do before a podcast.
Yeah.
But I think I was very repressed. I had very, like, the idea of sex education, actually, it was one of those, when I got the offer to do this show, I kind of made myself do it. And I was
really?
Just on the outside going, oh, you're making yourself do this. Because I think I went to a private school. I wasn't a boarder, but there were boarders. And it was pretty repressed. I don't have happy memories of it. And so anything connected with education is quite difficult for me. And certainly sex education, I think it took me a long time post-school to kind of unwind my repression. So very nervous is the answer.
But then in terms of your formal sex education, you say it was quite repressed. Can you remember anything about that?
Well, nothing. I mean, I don't, like, formally, I don't think we ever had a sex education lesson. It would literally have been mentioned in biology. I've got the image in my mind of the classic cutaway diagram of penis sideways, you know, kind of in that awful kind of cut. I mean, I'm miming it now, which is no good for a podcast. But but just, you know, that almost like that was my formal sex education, was like, this happens, something to do with gametes, run along, you know.
It's funny you say that, because when I was younger and I was living with my mum, you know, when your computer has the screensaver and it will just be your pictures from your computer, just like on a roll. So with my mum, it was obviously like family holiday photos and stuff. But because you're a sex therapist, she had that very photo you're talking about, like cross section of a penis that would often
it
come
was,
up.
It was, yes. Do you know, it was awful. Those things were used for teaching. So it's because I teach sex therapy as well. And people would kind of come past my study and see them and say, oh, that reminds me, I just wanted to ask you about this. And I thought, oh, God. Oh, God.
But it's such a confronting image when it's the only representation of genitalia that you are being shown by an authority. It is, it's inherently castrated. It's not just kind of floating in space. It's sliced down the middle. Yeah. It's like, this is how that all works. It's a sort of horrifying thing. It doesn't make you feel good at all.
No.
Yeah, and in the same way that it's, you know, very human in that it's the inner workings of actually how a human body works, you know, it's not what I think about. And when I'm thinking, I don't think about how all those things are going on and working, even though I'm about to say on a podcast with my mum, I think about my penis a lot.
I think by the time you're doing a sex education podcast with your mum, you've got to get past that. Yeah, you've already committed.
So, Stuart, you say you can't remember too much of your sex education, other than emblematic pictures of cut-up penises. What then? Where else did you get it from then?
I know that my parents had a copy of The Joy of Sex with the classic, the hairy guy.
The hairy man.
What was this? What's The Joy of Sex?
Oh, it's a classic book from, I guess, the 70s, judging by the hair on that guy.
Alex Comfort, yeah.
That's really funny, because that is funny that you don't even know the title of it. I mean, why would you? But I get the impression it was a big, iconic book. Is that right, Kate, that it was, you know?
It certainly was.
Wow. Yeah. So they were kind of almost like, I remember them being like pencil crayon drawings. Yeah. They were probably pen and ink drawings. Mm. And it was a hairy man and a less but still hairy lady. And they were sort of having intimate cuddles with one another.
Oh, wow.
And I think, I mean, even I've not had this thought before, but it was probably left out for me to find.
Oh.
You know, it was, I don't think I found it when I was rifling through my parents' possessions, but I've just realised now as a parent myself, oh yes, my children are one day going to rifle through my possessions. I better make sure everything is secure, more secure than it is at the moment. But yeah, so I don't know if it had been left out for me particularly. Mm. And without wanting to sort of drop my parents in it at all, I don't think that they, I don't remember. And this is difficult because although I'm repressed inherently as a result of the British public school system, I don't have clear memories of a lot of my childhood. I hear people talk about their childhoods and describe them in a way that I think, God, I couldn't go into that much detail. Maybe they did give me a sit down talk, but I only remember one talk from my dad, and it was literally him drunk at his 40th birthday party, feeling I think there's something he should have said. And it's sort of almost, I mean, and again, I feel like I've told this story more than, obviously it only happened once and I've thought about it a few times, so I might be remembering the memory. But from what I remember, he sort of in passing stopped and went, oh, you know, we should at some point you can put them on your heads at parties. That was it. That was the whole
chat. And how old were you when he said that? Was it too late by that point?
That's a good question. I don't know. Yeah. I certainly knew what he was talking about.
Yeah.
And I certainly affected a kind of, I know, mate, but I might have been affecting a, hey, man of the world like me kind of a thing.
I'll stop you right there, Dad.
I know about sex. I'm a man of the world.
I know about the birds and the bees.
I know about mums, tongues, and their bum.
I don't know if you know yet, but I'm 14 now.
I know about playboys and sex toys.
There's nothing you can tell me.
When it comes to sex, there ain't nothing for me to learn next.
So when your dad said that to you and had that chat, do you reckon it was too late? by that point?
I didn't lose my virginity until I was 17.
Right.
So I feel like the chat was probably pre that. Mm. But I think a lot of my informal sex education, I actually got from, I don't want to say art, sounds highfalutin, or culture, but from stand-up comedy or from comic books, but not comic books about sex, comic books about, not specifically sex education, but I remember, you know, being into sci-fi, which is often written by really good nerds with a, you know, Doctor Who is basically written by good nerds. And I would have like novelizations of Doctor Who. And the point of that is always about respecting people, respecting women. And so that was kind of a big part of my understanding of the world was from those sort of cultural things, because I certainly wasn't getting that from school or from friends particularly. It was probably role-playing games and Doctor Who novelizations, I'm ashamed to say. So
Dungeons and Dragons, but not sex dungeons.
Yeah, well, yeah, sex dungeons, but sex dragons. I think that I have a particular routine from Mark Thomas that stuck in my mind, the comedian Mark Thomas, who I was a huge fan of. He was playing a dad trying to get his son to be sex positive. And in it, he was describing getting various foods, like a kiwi that was sort of inherently hairy or furry, and sort of putting it on a plate and going, "Look, son, there it is. It's hairy. Don't be scared of it." You know, that kind of a thing. And I think at one point in the routine, he says, "And remember, the gentleman always goes down first." And you know what I mean? And like, I don't remember it word for word, but it made a huge impression on me. So I think that the sort of right-thinking comedians that I used to follow and adore, probably I would pick up bits of how sex worked and how relationships worked, but almost by kind of like taking to bits, like retroactively working out why an audience was laughing, if you see what I mean. That makes me seem very one-dimensional, but I think it's true.
that I have to say, that's fascinating. That was never, I would never thought on this podcast we'd say, "Oh, where did you glean some of your sex education from?" And they'd say other stand-up comics or, you know, role-playing games and sort of sci-fi novels and stuff. I think that's amazing.
Yeah, well, I mean, movies as well, obviously. You know, you'd catch a bit of late-night Channel 4 art house and go, "Oh, right, what's going on there?" But there wasn't the opportunity in those times to kind of decide to see that stuff. It wasn't available. I remember, and I've no idea whether this is a false memory, because in the light of day, it seems preposterous. But I have a clear mental image of, like, there almost being like a shed, like a sort of janitor's shed, like an old kind of, like a garage, which was just full of old newspapers. And on the premises of my school that we managed to, if not break into, then be in at break time in an not allowed capacity. Mm. And I'm sure I remember me and several of my friends, and this was the junior school, we must have been 10, kind of spotting, like climbing on this mountain of maybe 600 copies of The Sun and going, "Oh my God, have you seen this?" And just looking at all these page threes.
I was going to say, have you turned to page three? Yeah, page three are mine as well. What's going on with page three?
What are the odds? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Now, I mean, I'm not in touch with any of the people who I remember being there anymore to check whether that's true. It seems dreamlike, but I think that happened. So I think that was probably my first experience of pornography in a very sort of softcore way.
Mm. Yeah, a dream like a mountain of porn is imaginative. Maybe some kids would
And then
have
all
had.
My teeth fell out and I turned into a fish. Yeah, yeah. Totally standard childhood scenario.
I'm just a fish in an infinite sea. Look over there, a mountain of pornography. I'm just a fish, I live in a sea anemone. Look at my mouth, all my teeth have fallen out.
All my teeth have fallen out.
So that's your sort of formative sex education. But what about later in your life, Stuart?
It was for a while. It was for a while. I, having had quite a repressed childhood, I became very sexually expressive in my 20s and 30s. And I don't know if you've read The Ethical Slut, but I read The Ethical Slut. I really recommend that book. It's sort of, I suppose these days people have regarded it as a kind of a manual on successful polyamory. You don't need to do polyamory successful or otherwise to find it a really interesting book. Mm. And I think it's about, it sort of takes at its core the idea that sex is a really positive thing and being attracted to people is a really positive thing. And we fuck it all up by nature of our humanity and our guilt and our shame and our fear and all the rest of it and our jealousy. we can really ruin something beautiful and pure and wonderful. So I think in my kind of dating life, I was in a series of very long relationships. And I think the times when I wasn't in long relationships, I was very sexually active. And I'm proud that I always aimed to or aspired to be sexually active in line with the principles of this book, The Ethical Slut. I've certainly had occasions where my insistence on telling a one-night stand partner, a potential one-night stand, that, look, I'm not in this for a relationship. This is just a one-night thing. Is that cool? And you know, it's made it awkward. And they've gone, I don't think it is cool. And I'm like, that's fine. And then I walk away, take a cold shower and hit myself in the face a few times. But I'm kind of proud that I have done that because it's the right thing to do. Mm. And particularly, I mean, in my stand-up comedy, when I was becoming a stand-up comedian, I did lots of material about sex. I was very sexually active and a lot of my material was about kind of reveling in that, really. Now I am married and I'm a parent, so my material is about how incredibly frustrating elements of my life are, how frustrating it is having kids, those sorts of things. I think I'm a better comic because of it, because I'm kicking against circumstance, you know, rather than just being one of those young white guy comedians who's like, way, you know, my life's going great. Well, sure, what have you got to say?
So what was the shift then? Because you say there's clearly a stark contrast between when you were a kid and when you're in your 20s. What was the shift? What happened, you know?
I'm pleased to say that I ran away with the circus.
Yes!
I literally did. I mean, it was all kind of a jumble of different things happened. The broader answer is performing arts. I started going to, I was at an all-boys school, I started going at weekends to a young people's theatre group, which was mixed and brilliant and it was fun, and I suddenly just became a different person when I was there. I can recognise that now. Like, now it's clear as day. There's a photo of me wearing my school uniform in a darkened room looking harrowed at the camera, and then, like, the next day, there's a photo from the next day of me playing Oliver Twist in this production and just feeling so full of life and energy and just feeling loved and respected and all those things. I was really, really lucky to have the opportunity to transform myself from a very kind of unhappy place to just an incredible kind of smorgasbord of people.
That's so amazing.
Isn't it?
I do bang on about it a lot, and that's why. There's a running joke on my podcast. Whenever I mention I used to be a street performer, you have to take a drink. And I'm aware that I bang on about it, but it was so fundamental to my self-image and the transformation of my self-image from being fearful to being celebratory.
So, Stuart, you've got two kids yourself, 4 and 1. Those aren't the names. Those are those are the ages. I was just wondering, I know that's very, very young, but have you thought about sex education for them yet? And are you instilling anything in them now?
We try and be really on top of consent. And we are never going to make either of them kiss a relative that they don't want to. We're never going to go, oh, go on, give your granny a kiss sort of thing. Because not that anyone's granny has ever been predatory to me. Yeah. But I think that the idea, particularly with girls, but with boys as well, the idea that you are expected to allow people close to you or it's awkward, I don't think that's a very sensible thing to teach as a sort of template. One of the, I mean, this is a big leap I'm making now, but you should speak to Alice Fraser, brilliant comedian Alice Fraser, who's on The Bugle and various other things. She teaches empowerment classes. She leads empowerment classes for young women. And one of the most powerful things she said to me, and I really remember this, I realise this is a bit serious and it's kind of slightly off the topic of my own children, but one of the things that really stayed with me, she said she teaches girls that, like, the essence of empowerment is that if you think you're in a dangerous situation where a guy is taking your consent for granted, if you say out loud, don't rape me, please don't rape me, it will complete, I mean, Digger, I saw your head rock back then. Of course, it just takes all of the kind of the insinuation and the subtlety out of it and says point blank, and actually knowing, feeling that you are empowered to say a point blank refusal like that, to actually say the word out loud. I can imagine that. I think we're very on top of consent. We're very on top of, like, I say to my daughter all the time, we've got a running joke whereby she's very disdainful towards me. I mean, I say it's a running joke. She's just very disdainful towards me. But I will say to her, do you want to have a cuddle with daddy? And she'll go, no, no. Mm. And I never force it. I never say, come here and give me a cuddle. I go, okay.
From what I can tell, Stuart, like what you were saying there sounds brilliant. I mean, I think what's the good thing about the consent conversation is it's in all facets of life rather than just a purely sexual one. It's stuff that can be born out of other stuff. I mean, Mum, what do you think about that? Is that right?
Oh, no, absolutely wonderful. Mm. I mean, you have to start the consent conversations as early as possible. And, you know, and it can apply to anything. And it certainly can apply to your body. And being comfortable talking about your own body is really important too. It just sounds terrific.
Oh, one second. We've got visitors. Sorry. Hello. I'm recording a podcast.
Oh, I thought you were.
Yeah, sorry. Hello, darling. Are you being a panda?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, gang, 2 seconds.
This is so
this
cute.
Is great.
In some ways, this is perfect.
Do you want to come and
sorry,
say hello?
Gang, 2 seconds.
No.
No. Oh. Okay.
I wanted to come and give you a cuddle.
Did you want to come and give me a cuddle?
No.
Yeah, really? Hey, the system works. Hello. 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 Do you want to wave? These people might wave back. Yes!
Oh,
that's Kate.
This is so sweet.
And that's Diggory. Are you being a panda?
Yeah.
Okay, bye-bye, Piggy. Shall we say bye, everyone?
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye. Love you. See you soon.
So, Stuart, you're a little bit hypervigilant. That, I guess, means that you're always on the lookout for danger and very sensitive to any sort of risk. What effect has that had on you in your parenting?
Yes, I panicked then because I realise now that's based on research outside the conversation we've just had. And I thought, oh, my God, can you diagnose I've got hypervigilance from just what we've said? But yes, I'm sure you can. I definitely have hypervigilance. I was in a very serious car accident when I was 11.
Oh,
and
wow.
I think I attribute it to that. I think there are certain things. A therapist I was with for a while ago, I can't really call him my therapist anymore. I've not seen him for a few years, but he certainly said a lot of like there are certain triggers I have, that things that really upset me and kind of hit me in a very profound, just like I'm a bell and you've gone dong. Like there are certain little things that just make me vibrate a bit.
Mm.
And I think that is fairly fundamental to them. So certainly I'm very hypervigilant. I'm constantly on the lookout for things going wrong. And again, that's a big issue with my parenting. I am constantly having to check myself, often too late, after I've already said, oh, don't do that. If you fall off that, you could break your leg. Do you know what I mean? I'm teaching him that the world is a dangerous place in a way that is not fair. The world is a dangerous place, but you can be careful.
But on the other hand, as you said, it's really great if you're aware of that kind of thing. And what's the kind of hypervigilance that is really unhelpful is the sort that people aren't aware of, that just constant anxiety and fear of getting something wrong, rather than something bad being done to them, which is external, something that they do causing a problem, which absolutely feeds into adult life and everything you do and sex. And if you've had any sort of trauma, even the kind of trauma where you feel you can't speak your mind, then you have no language usually. I mean, everything is felt rather than expressed. So things like clown skills or theatre or music or art or anything that you can use to express it is brilliant. So if you give children those things as they're growing, then they've always got a way of expressing themselves throughout their lives, haven't they? And rather than having to think, oh God, I'm just going to get it wrong and everything's going to go wrong and the world will end.
Yes. And he's like, I've noticed he's got, we've got kind of temper issues at the moment. And he and I, he has flare ups whenever I tell him no, basically. Like his mum's very good at saying no in a super playful way. Whereas I just, core value for me, I feel like if there's danger, he might run into the road. I need to know that when I shout his name, he stops. So I have a certain bluntness from my dad when I say no, even if I say it in a gentle way, he's very sensitive and he'll throw a fit. He'll get really cross with me. But I have noticed sometimes he will march off and scribble an angry picture of some unhappy faces and then feel better. And I'm like, oh my God, this is great.
Wow. Yeah.
last thing we usually like to ask is, how was it for you? Is there anything that how was it for you? Is there anything you've learned? Is there anything that you've learned about yourself, maybe, or reminded yourself?
Yeah, I think just now when Kate was saying about things that are expressed, things that are felt but not expressed.
Well, things that have any sort of any kind of association with trauma or stress are very difficult to express verbally because they're so felt. Yeah. And particularly with young children, they don't have the language, do they? So they have a temper tantrum or something.
Yes, gotcha. Yes. Well, I think that I will continue to ruminate on that, because when you said that, I had one of those moments where I kind of went, oh, like a big trigger for me. If anyone ever says to me, it's going to be all right, I probably will start crying. I don't know what it is. It's just one of those little key phrases. And I had a little one of those when you said about stuff being expressed and stuff being felt. I kind of went, oh, and then I thought, oh, I would normally be paying someone for this experience. I'm so pleased to get this free therapy from you. So it was very nice for me. Thank you.
Oh, well, I'm glad you're a fan of therapy. Of course, that's brilliant.
Oh, yeah, love it. I did CBT for a long time, and then I did Gestalt psychotherapy and with the most recent guy. And at one point he said, very early on in our relationship together, he said, I'm just going to try something here. And he put four chairs down and he said, I'm just going to ask you to sit in each of these four chairs and give voice to these different attitudes that we've established, that we've been talking about. And he said, it's sort of a role play thing. He said, Stu, with some clients, I think this will be a bit much for them, but I think you're going to be fine.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's brilliant.
That's great.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so
Thanks
much.
Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed that. It was great. And I'm, okay, it's over now. I was really nervous.
Oh,
it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much, Stuart.
Nice one. What Fantastic. A pleasure. Thanks, gang.
It's the mailbag. Send Kate your queries. Twopodcasts@hatch.com. It's the mailbag. Send Kate your queries. Podcasts@hatch.com.
Hello there. I have a query for Kate. I would like to know when the real sex education mailbag starts.
The real sex education mailbag starts right now.
Thank you so much to Stuart Goldsmith. What a lovely guy. I love that man.
Yeah.
Right, so now is the time in the show that we take a look into our mailbox. It's your chance to have your questions answered by an accredited sex and relationship therapist. If you have any queries for my mum, you can send them in via email to podcasts@hattrick.com. That's Hattrick with two T's. And don't worry, we'll keep your anonymity unless you say otherwise. So let's take a look. The first question we have is from Jenna, who says, my problem is that I've been faking orgasms during sex. I don't know how to convey that I would prefer some different moves, as what my boyfriend now thinks gets me there doesn't turn me on at all, really.
Yeah, I mean, this is happening a lot because so many people have a sexual relationship before they have a kind of partner relationship. And so it doesn't matter so much when it's things are just casual. And then all of a sudden, for long-term relationship, it starts to matter a lot. If you can't bring yourself to be totally honest, I would suggest saying, oh, that's nice, but actually I prefer this even more. Or saying that you were really into just being together and the experience, rather than that you were climaxing and that they've misread it, perhaps. But I mean, all of these things are subterfuge. It's much better to be honest and come clean.
Yeah, I think I imagine that the boyfriend would want to get you off. If they're a good boyfriend, they'd want to, you know, help you get there.
Well, it's probably something you can have a little laugh about, isn't it? I mean, if you tell the story the right way, you know, I wanted to please you, you know, so.
Just being honest.
Whatever.
I mean, yeah, it's usually a lot, it's very scary beforehand, but then when you actually do it, you realise, oh, that wasn't that scary at all.
Yeah.
Okay, the next question we have is from Anonymous, and Anonymous says, is it okay to have vaginal sex without a condom if you've just had anal sex with a condom? Does removing the condom offer protection from infection?
Well, it does offer some protection, but in an ideal world, you should really have a thorough wash and wash your hands as well as your penis after anal sex, because there's an awful lot of bacteria around, and to be absolutely on the safe side, you don't want to introduce it into the vagina. Sometimes you could perhaps use wipes if you really, really can't bring yourself to go and have a wash. But in an ideal world, soap and water's best.
Well, thank you for all your submissions to Kate. If you'd like to put a query to Kate about anything sexual relationship related, or would just like to get in touch, we're podcasts@hattrick.com. That's Hattrick with two T's. A big thank you to Stuart Goldsmith and Kate Campbell. Cheers, Mum.
Cheers, Dukes.
See you next week for more real sex education. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Real Sex Education, which is hosted by Diggory Waite and Kate Campbell. The show is produced by Andy Goddard and Diggory Waite. The Real Sex Education is a Hattrick podcast. If you'd like to hear more podcasts by Hattrick, including Time Ghost with Alexander Armstrong and Ben Miller, just search Hattrick Podcasts on your podcast provider of choice. This podcast is based on the real-life relationship between the host, Diggory Waite, and his mother, accredited sex therapist Kate Campbell. The show is therefore inspired by, but otherwise unrelated to, the TV show Sex Education. But yes, Diggory does wish his co-host was Gillian Anderson.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.